Life is full of what-ifs, some awesome, like what if AI could fold your laundry? And some, well, less awesome, like what if you have unexpected medical costs? UnitedHealthcare can help get you covered with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. They supplement your primary plan to help you manage out-of-pocket costs. No deductibles, no enrollment periods, and especially no more what-ifs. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the What Culture Gaming Podcast. I'm your host, Scott Tilford, joined by Rich Hudson.
Hello.
And Kirsten Rea.
Hello.
Hello. Now, I thought we'd do another question podcast. People can go over to Twitter, use the hashtag WCGP. Let us know what you're getting on with, what games you're playing, what different thoughts and bits and bobs you have on your mind. And we'll get to things in the coming weeks. So, first question from Dawson Poe, who says, do you think that PlayStation's strategy of staying quiet is working for them? On the one hand, it builds hype for all the fans to see the console, but it does build up annoyance given the fact that Microsoft have already shown off so much stuff. This, I think, was submitted just before the Ghost of Tsushima thing got out there. But Rich, where do you come down on the way that they're sort of playing this year?
Playing it quiet works for so long, but now we've seen, as you said, like double the amounts of like Xbox stuff. We've had the gameplay stuff. We've seen the console. Now it's kind of like, okay, we need this PlayStation event to be officially confirmed because it still hasn't been officially confirmed for, what is it, June 3rd or something?
It's been rumored for so long. It was meant to be one back in February. Now it's just in the summer at some point.
I think because they're still being quiet about it, it's like, okay, you know, they've revealed the controller, which is really nice, but we need to see the rest of it now because it's only going to be, what, like, you know, 5-6 months away before launch. Like, we should hopefully know about it now so we can actually start saving our pennies to buy a PS5. So I think they are taking their sweet time. So I'm hoping that this reveal event isn't that far away.
Yeah, they said that the rollout would mimic the PS4, which is weird because I heard about the PS4 way before it came out, but they actually only revealed it at the E3 that it then came out in the holiday. So like, there is still a way for them to mimic that stuff, but it, because Microsoft have got the jump on them so much, it feels like they're missing something. But yeah, Kirsten, what do you think of the way they've been handling it?
Yeah, I think like Rich said, that it only works for so long. And I think even though the stuff that Microsoft has revealed, in my opinion, hasn't been great, I think that's what's annoying more, is because it's sort of like, oh, really? Like, that's what Microsoft has shown us so far. Like, come on, like, let's see what you've got there. And let's see what, you know, just give us something so that we can at least get, like I said, a bit excited and start saving up the dough and start and be able to pick your option. Because I personally like both Xbox and PS4. I don't really have a preference. I'll play both. But I will want to buy one first compared to the other. So at the moment, all I've seen is this kind of chunky block of the Xbox. And I was like, well, I guess I'm getting the Xbox because I don't know what the PlayStation looks like. Yeah, it's just, you know, and I've not seen anything. So, it's time now, PlayStation, to just let it go. Just let us know what's going on.
Drop some logos. I think for me, I kind of think that they could have done it a hell of a lot better. You've got such a weird rollout. Like, the first mention of it for the PS5 was in the Wired magazine interview. And then they sort of, you know, did a blog post update for the controller. And they've not really, like, we know which projects are coming. We know about Spider-Man 2 and God of War 2 and stuff. But none of that stuff is official. It's just been mentioned in interviews. They haven't, like, put out trailers and stuff. I guess, like, another thing is, like, what do you guys want from a PS5? Do you feel like the PS4 still has so much life in it? Or is it kind of like, are you ready for the next generation?
Weirdly, the thing that I first jump to whenever I think about the PS5 is, please, let's have everything that you said will be backwards compatible be backwards compatible, because at the moment there's nothing that I will be getting on launch. There's nothing that's releasing at the end of this year that's making me go, okay, I need to buy a PS5, or I'm gonna pre-order this Xbox exclusive for PC. Sorry?
Looking fancy rocks. Got all the fancy rocks on the
PS5. Oh, I love the fancy rocks. By the way, I do apologize to the listeners slash viewers if you can hear the gales outside in Gateshead. It's pretty damn breezy.
The banshee.
I don't know how often the video is going to cut back to me just sitting here looking awkward while it's moving. So I apologize for that. I'm just waiting to see if there's something that I will actually want to get. There's a part of me that's worried that I'm going to see the PS5 and go from a design perspective and go, that's so pretty. I want that under my TV. I don't care. I've got nothing new to play on it. I just want it under my TV. I want the backwards compatible stuff. The thing I want the most, honestly, is I want the PS4 themes to work on the PS5.
That's because
I love my Tetris Effect dashboard on my PS4. I love it. I'm like, just let me use that on the PS5 and I'll be happy. But at the minute, there's nothing that's screaming to me that's going to make me get the PS5 on launch unless they have like a new VR title for it or something like that. I'm still waiting on that definitive thing that'll make me get a PS5. I'm not going to get a Series X. I don't. Right. Since I've got a PC, buying an Xbox is completely redondant. So I'm waiting for that. Something,
yeah, they need something. I mean, it is weird. Like, I think there was a recent interview with Hiroki Totoki, which is like their I think he's like the head of their engineering department, and he was being asked like, hey, you know, you guys are playing it pretty quietly, you're sort of got this kind of more considered rollout, and he was like, just wait for the sales, just wait and judge us by our sales, which like is probably gonna, you know, come true. But yeah, I think they could do with some sort of head turning reveal, some sort of game reveal, something like that. My assumption is that after The Last of Us and Ghost of Tsushima get out the way, then I think they'll go straight into it. I just think that they don't want to do too much too fast in terms of, you know, without the sort of, I guess they could confirm backwards compatibility and say, hey, look, don't worry, this will work or whatever. But maybe they don't want to just eat into the idea of PS4 availability by doing too much too fast with the PS5. Next question from .pone. I think a bunch of us got tagged in this and it kind of blew up last week. He was just saying, this generation, we've seen the rise of photo mode in our favorite video games, to the point that it's a featured highlight of game presentations. It was in the Ghost of Tsushima one. Do you think it's a feature that every game should have in the next generation? I absolutely love photo modes. I think we talked about them on another podcast, actually, but I might have just been thinking of the replies I gave the guy on Twitter. But like, I don't know if you guys get so caught up in pausing every 2 seconds just to reframe the camera. Like, going back to The Last of Us, like every single scene, I'm like, oh, that would make a cool screenshot and that'll be a cool thing. But all I end up doing is taking like 100 shots and then deleting them off the PS4's system console thing anyway. But where do you guys come down on photo modes in general?
Yeah, I love a good photo mode. I remember when Metro Exodus came out and all I was doing was just taking photos every 5 seconds because it was just such a beautiful game. And I was so proud. Like, every time I took a picture, I was like, Sam, come with it. Look at this picture I've just taken. Look at my lovely background now. Look how pretty it is. I mean, I don't know if it necessarily needs to be in every game, but it is nice to kind of have that option to be able to. And I think it enables you to have that appreciation for a game when it is so pretty, because you're not just taking pictures for the sake of taking pictures to be like, oh, look at my armor, look at my character, or look at this. You're taking pictures because you are just blown away by like, wow, look how pretty this is. Like you said, wow, wouldn't this make such a brilliant screensaver. So yeah, just kind of chucking that in there to sort of see the fans' appreciation for your work, I think is a good idea, because yeah, just you know, being it must be so nice as a developer to be tagged in all these pictures of people being like, look at this lovely picture I've taken, wow, what a beautiful game, and just sit there and be like, yeah, I made that. Like, yeah, thank you for appreciating. Yeah, you know, it doesn't necessarily need to be in every game. Probably not, but I think it is a really, really lovely feature to have.
Rich, considering how much like stock you put, like, you know, you have this incredible PC and stuff, do you spend a lot of time scrutinizing texture detail and stuff like that?
Funnily enough, the only photo modes I've really put any significant time into were Spider-Man PS4, which, as Kirsten said, there's something that the developers love seeing those images, like on Reddit and on Twitter, the images from that game that people are making are still getting like so much attention because that photo mode is so damn good. And I put a lot of time into that one. And I did somewhat into Forza Horizon 4, but interestingly, I don't always jump to photo modes. As much as I'm someone who loves like compositing that sort of thing and making really nice images and stuff like that, it's just stuff I do. I've weirdly not put as much time into those things as I thought I would. I've not touched the Doom Eternal photo mode at all. I'm too absorbed in the gameplay to think, I know what, I'm going to pause here and take a picture. I think once Denuvo's gone from the PC version, I'll actually play the game again. I might actually have to give it a go. But I agree that, yeah, photo modes are great for just, you know, the share button on the Xbox One and PS4 basically pushed developers to say, okay, we need something that people can share that aren't just video clips and gameplay, because that's going to get really boring. So a photo mode in games that deserve it would have that kind of clarity or fidelity or visual style to warrant a photo mode, then by all means, give it to us. Apparently there's one that was removed from Half-Life Alyx, which is a real shame, because that game is gorgeous.
I wonder if they took it out.
It might get added in.
Like, you would be able to see, because sometimes when, especially in Doom Eternal, for example, when you put the photo mode on, loads of the, like, muzzle flashes and stuff don't line up with where Doom Guy is, because it's more where your perspective would be. So sometimes when, like, it's a first-person game and you put the photo mode on, it kind of breaks everything. And I wonder if that was the case with Half-Life, if you would just see, like, two floating hands in the
middle. Yeah, I think that's maybe what it is, because then obviously with Doom Eternal and Alyx, they don't have a full 3D modeled player model, so yeah, you are literally just hands in Alyx or just arms as you are in Doom. So that probably has made things difficult for them, but it'd be nice to see him put it back in. But I think photo modes should be present in the games that need it. If you've just got like a pixel platformer, obviously not really as useful, but anything else, then by all means give the players that extra bit of, not, it's obviously not gameplay, but it's more time into the game. Give them that creativity to make things. Same with Super Mario Odyssey. I actually took quite a few pictures in that as well.
I forgot about that. Yeah, I forgot about that game's mode. The thing is, like what Kirsten said, like it takes so long to put these things together that, like, it's a good way of celebrating the art teams and the art direction in something, because, like, you know, crunch is a massive thing. The amount of different assets it takes to make a AAA game, like just being able to sort of just stop for a second and take it in, like, that, yeah, I think they're a worthwhile thing. Even though sometimes first time through a game, I'm getting way too distracted, pausing every 2 seconds. Like, maybe make it like an end game unlockable or something. That would be cool. Next question from Nicholas Coombs, who says, with the success of Overcooked 1 and 2 and Moving Out is out as well, what occupation should Team 17 tackle next? I don't know if you guys have played Moving Out.
Amy and I streamed that on Twitch early this week. It was the first time I ever played it. It's so fun. I would say that Moving Out ranks like a billion times higher than Overcooked. I love Overcooked, but Moving Out is so much more. A, it's more fun. B, it's a lot more accessible compared to Overcooked. It's nowhere near as stressful. And something for me and Scott, if you press jump so many times, occasionally your character will fart. So every time killing myself laughing, my little cat just as he jumps around. Moving out is amazing. If you've not played it, you should totally try it.
I tried the demo and just thought it was really hard, but like I guess I just need to try again, because me and my wife played it and we just couldn't, because in Moving Out, it's, you know, physics based thing, you're dragging different pieces of furniture to a specific goal, which is the moving truck, and then they also add obstacles in, like different roads. It turns into Frogger in the demo, and we just couldn't get stuff to like throw it in the right direction, and it was all like, because it was physics dependent, things were falling in the water, and I was just like, oh, this is, I wasn't getting on board with it. But Kirsten, have you tried Overcooked or Moving Out?
I've tried Overcooked. Yeah, that's a good like thing. What I love about these games is that they're such a good like couch co-op game to play with like your friends and family, to just like bring everyone together and just have like a proper good laugh. Overcooked was brilliant. I still haven't played Moving Out. It's on my list. Like I literally, as soon as I saw the trailer for it, I was like, that looks brilliant. Like we have to play that. And I've still not done it. I've got it downloaded. It's there. It's ready. So yeah, I've got that on my list. Hopefully over this weekend, I might be able to sit down with my partner and we'll have a good go at it, because I'm up for a good old jolly time. But yeah, I love games like that. Me and Jules recently played Ember, which is quite similar, where it's like your player's like a firefighter, and games like that, they're just so funny, just taking something that's just either mundane or something that's quite a serious job and just completely just turning it into something so stupid and silly. It's brilliant. So yeah, I don't really know what they could probably tackle anything next, really. Like they could make a game about literally watching paint dry and it would be hilarious.
I like the idea. I don't know if you guys played Totally Reliable Delivery Service, but that is like a physics-based take on it. Pretty much just Death Stranding by way of Gang Beasts. Like it's everything's, you know, super physics-based, and it's like it's buggy and stuff, but like it's fun enough. but yeah, I think those things that are so physics dependent, for me, it's such a fine line. Like I got sick of Overcooked because it reminded me of working retail. It literally reminded me of working in Argos, like in the stockroom. I was like, oh god, I don't want to be, you know, so contingent on like customer orders and stuff. But I like the idea of the core of it. Rich, do you have any particular, like, I don't know, jobs you would apply
just,
this stuff
just
to?
Thinking about it, I'd love to see them doing like almost like a safe for work Viscera cleanup detail, if you've ever seen that game. Yeah. Just like do a cleaning game, kind of in the same way that moving out is like, okay, you're literally moving people out of the house, but in the process of things, you're breaking all the windows, you're wrecking everything. Just imagine that. It's like, yes, everything in your house is broken, but everything's very clean. So yeah. Something along those lines. Just thinking of like a service job that could
work.
A very
shiny pile of garbage.
A bit silly, but yeah, maybe cleaning out.
I would back something like that. Yeah, my mind went into some sort of like stock room type thing, like using forklift trucks and launching like a fragile package from one end of the warehouse to the other one. And
there
then
are
maybe that's
serious games like that that already exist. There's one called Wilmot's Warehouse that's just on mobile, but I know it's out on like Switch and stuff. So, but yeah, a fun version of that could be quite good as well.
There's something else on Switch as well, and I think it's called Got the Job or something like that. That they showed as part of the last Nintendo Direct, that was like a guy going for a job and then like bumbling through like an office environment and breaking everything. It's kind of like its own little thing now. This sort of genre of like super physics heavy, everything goes wrong simulator.
It's kind of like Job Simulator in by Alchemy. Like it's that kind of style.
I was just
thing.
About to say, I love Job Simulator. Just taking something that like people can relate to and being like you said, Scott, like, oh yeah, I remember working in retail and having that sort of job, but then making it like so fun and giving you those options to be like, when a customer comes in, to be like, do you know what? Oh, this is something I've always wanted to do. So
wish like in those games, if there was a bit where every now and then a customer comes up to you all red faced and you can just slap them, I would take slap the customer simulator, because we've
retail
all been there.
Simulator, yeah, that would be brilliant.
Just, you know, have retail sort of like sim. Karen Defeater simulator, and I'll take them.
Yeah.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Before we go any further, I want to talk to you about today's sponsor, Masterclass. With the amount of time we spend discussing and analyzing video games on this channel, it's always good to understand exactly how these experiences are put together. And fortunately for me, I can do just that with Masterclass. With Masterclass's streaming service, you can learn from the best to become your best, studying and growing with over 200 plus of the world's leading instructors. For me, I've been having a blast using a class on video game design by The Sims creator Will Wright to find out exactly how game mechanics are designed around player psychology, as well as learning how important playtesting is to shipping the titles that you and I both love. But it hasn't stopped there, as I've also been brushing up on my practical filmmaking skills directly from my favourite movie director, Martin Scorsese, as well as trying to get back in the cooking game with Roy Choi's amazing course on intuitive cooking. Seriously, my kitchen is a mess, but my belly has never been more grateful. For just $10 a month, an annual membership with Masterclass gets you unlimited access to courses on your phone, computer, smart TV, or even via audio-only modes. Even better, every new membership comes with a 30-day money-back guarantee, and 88% of members feel that the service has made a positive impact on their lives. And to put the cherry on top of that cake, right now, What Culture Gaming listeners get an additional 15% off any annual membership at masterclass.com/gaming. That's 15% off at masterclass.com/gaming. What's that? You want it one more time? Well, that's the URL, masterclass.com/gaming. Right, now I'm going to watch Tony Hawk try to teach me how to ollie properly. I'll see you all soon.
Not to worry. The next question from Trotty XD, who says they've been playing through GTA San Andreas on the PS4, and it got them thinking about why haven't Rockstar remastered any more of their games? Surely people will be happy to see them, and those games should hopefully be as perfect now as when they came out. What do you guys think of that? I don't know. I think, Rich, did you not play the old GTAs?
I've played very little of the GTAs. The only one I've ever put really substantial time into was 5, and that's playing through the campaign mode, the story mode. I've never really got into GTA Online. Mm-hmm. I've always seen Rockstar as a very progressive company. They're always looking forward rather than looking back. So I know that True. They've done like mobile ports of the GTA games, and they've just re-released...
They did a VR version of L.A. Noire.
VR version of L.A. Noire. Yeah. They just did a release of GTA 4 on their Rockstar launcher. That's what I was thinking of. But they never seem to do the remasters and things. And I think as much as it'd be cool to see that, I think, because obviously there's so much of GTA 5 that's based, that's got, is it from San Andreas?
Where yeah, like it's like Los Santos from the same things. Environment.
So they've,
yeah.
they've kind of done that as like a spiritual successor. So the idea of remastering it, I think it's one of those games that the charm of it would have been removed with it being remastered. Because seeing something like GTA San Andreas in that sort of less, like more polygonal art style done in the style of GTA 5, I feel like it loses its iconography to that era. Like, I think it should stay as is. If they do like upscale ports, which they've done with the PS4 ones, that's probably the best way to do it. It's the same treatment I'd give to something like Simpsons Hit and Run or Time Splitter.
Yeah.
You just leave it as it is, but just upscale it, make it work on modern systems, and just leave it. So
I don't know if you guys saw Crash Team Racing in the remake one, Nitro Fueled. You can unlock the original polygonal model of Crash, but it's not identical. It's sort of like cel shaded, and it kind of looks like PS1, but it's modern. I would love that style to be applied to a ton of PS1 games, like Ape Escape and whatever else. But I don't know if Rockstar wouldn't want GTA being outwardly cartoony, even though it kind of was cartoony back in the day. But Kirsten, when you can down on the old GTAs, would you go back to them?
Well, here's the thing. I've always been more of a Saints Row gal, to be honest. Brilliant. And I never really played any of the GTAs. I'm aware of like how good San Andreas was story-wise, as well as Grand Theft Auto 5. Mm-hmm. But they never really appealed to me. I like having that sort of like being able to sort of character, you know, having your own character that you can customize and that sort of stuff. So they just didn't really appeal to me. But that being said, it seems like the year of remasters so far. So it could work. You know, they might jump on the bandwagon. But I think, like Rich said, it's having that nostalgia and that just the way it looks. Like that's why it's enjoyable. That's why people go back to it, is to sort of sit there and be like, oh man, I remember how good this game is. It hasn't changed. And I don't know. I don't really know if it would work.
My whole thing well is like, I don't know if it's just because I grew up with the PS1, the N64, like a polygonal, really early attempts at 3D graphics, that I have a nostalgia for them. I love really pristine HD polygons. Like when I got my N64, I got an HDMI like converter thing for it. And looking at Mario 64 in HD, like I love that, even though like I get that people say it looks really bad. And like, the faces on like, you know, GoldenEye or Metal Gear, where they're just one flat face on like a square head. I get why that looks bad. But I still have like a nostalgia for it. But I would want them to play into that if they were going to redo it, or add some sort of like PC texture pack. If you ever search Vice City, you know, 4K texture or whatever, people have already done like,
lighting and skybox mods for it, which look fine. But if you rebuilt the entire game in the same art style and graphical fidelity of GTA 5, I think it loses why people care about it.
Yeah, I think they'll do something new. Like you said, Rich, like GTA 5 is pretty much the remake, quote unquote, of San Andreas. It's just that it's a whole new thing, but the same similar environments. And that rumored wise, that's apparently what GTA 6 is in regards to Vice City. Next question from Shinji Rajabli, who I hopefully got your name right this time, who says, what do you think, now that we've seen the demo for the Unreal Engine 5, could mid-tier PC hardware handle new games with that engine? Since he submitted that, we have seen, there's a recent report from a couple of days ago saying that even like a mid-range laptop can handle Unreal Engine 5.
Yes.
But Rich, where do you come down on this stuff?
Because There's been a lot of thing about, obviously we did a podcast talking about the Series X reveal and the PS5 SSD stuff and how, you know, the change of SSD is like put PS5s well ahead of computers, which is a bit of a stretch to say the least. there is a lot of truth to that statement that the PS5 is using SSDs properly, because they're right. Like, they are taking an SSD's speed and architecture and using that in production with the games, hence why they're saying the games will be amazing on PS5. And I'm not going to dispute that, because PCs have just used the extra speed of an SSD to load things quicker. That's basically what it does. But if you're going to be utilizing that speed and making it a necessary part of the hardware, then you can play up on that. With obviously PCs being so modular and so freeform, you don't have that power. But as for the Unreal Engine stuff, it was interesting to see that I think PC Gamer did a report to say that they were taking like mid-tier laptops with, you know, relatively okay GPUs and saying, yep, it's running it fine. So I think that puts into perspective where these consoles will be, because they keep saying, you know, the PS5 is going to be equivalent to an RTX 2080, to which I say that's utter bollocks, because I have an RTX 2080 in my PC, and that cost me the same amount as my entire last PC.
Right.
They're not cheap. So to say that the PS5 is going to be doing that kind of power and being equivalent to it at a price point of, what, $400? I think they'll go as far as. It's rubbish. I think they can make things look really, really good in the same way that you can make older games look really, really good. Like, so if you take something like what Scott and I's favorite game ever, you take something like Split Second. If you said to somebody that was playing on an Xbox One, they'd believe you, because that game is really good looking for the time. You can take those engines, you can do so much with them to make them look really good and say, look, this looks like it'd be running on a 2080, but in reality it's not. So the Unreal Engine demo is fantastic, and it, you know, seeing the voxels they switched to, or triangles. Seeing all of that running in real time, and the fact that, as I said on this podcast before, that they're opening up the ceiling to people, to developers, to do whatever they want with this, to do the whole dreams thing. It's fantastic, but again, they'll always be limited consoles. As much as they're saying they're going to be like better than all PCs, they are still limited to the price point people will pay, and that will limit the resources they can use. So I'm not going to dispute that the PS5 and the Xbox Series X are looking like fantastic systems, and they're finally going to actually give people their money's worth and stop using old crap from forever ago in their hardware. The idea that this is like well ahead of PCs is a bit, it is a stretch.
I think that's going to be
the big... I'm not saying that you should negate everything they've been saying so far, because they have made some incredible strides, and it is genuinely exciting to see where they go. But yeah, just as I said, going back to the point, the fact that a mid-tier laptop can run that same demo at the same time kind of goes to show where they really are in comparison to PCs. But I don't want to sound like the big consoles are rubbish, because I don't hold that. I do not hold that.
No, I think they're just going for something, because it's always that conversation, especially considering when the PS4 and Xbox One came out, it was like, okay, when they launched, they're already behind that year's PC graphics cards and everything. So I think it's always a conversation of like, can you launch a console that is ahead, quote unquote, of the PC market? So I think it's just getting caught up in that, even though, like you said, the reality of it is that, you know, PCs are so much more modular, and they're going to get way further ahead way quicker if they're not already. And also the Unreal Engine, I guess they've made it so it can be downscaled effectively. Like, it can run, you know, it's going to be used across the board. It's not a PS5 engine. It's going to be on everything. So they're going to need it to work on everything. Kirsten, I know so little about PC stuff. Do you have anything to add to this, or are you the same as me?
I've only just really started getting into like PC gaming and everything. And I am really enjoying it. I've actually not played on the Xbox or the PlayStation in months. So I'm really having a good time, and I can see the difference. So, saying that the new console is going to be better than a PC, I'm with Rich. I don't understand how that can be possible. If they are at least even on par, I think would be even a stretch. But, I mean, you know, it'll be interesting to see. I am excited to sort of compare the two and sort of see how smooth and how crisp everything is looking and how well it plays. But, I think it is a little bit of a stretch to say that they are going to be better.
It reminds me of all the like ultra HD, full HD, super duper, you know, there's the different buzzwords in marketing and things like that. There's going to be a lot of those conversations going around for the rest of the year. A second last question from I brought a lemon to a knife fight. Great name. he says that we talk quite a lot about demos being good for the industry. Do you think it would benefit the developers and players if completing a game's demo meant that you got a discount on the game itself, sort of like a loyalty reward? That would definitely benefit the consumer, but there's no way that any publisher would sign off on that.
As much as that would be good for the player, that makes no sense, unfortunately. The idea of the demo is to get people to pay the full price because they're at least getting a rough idea of what they're going to be paying for. Mm-hmm. As much as, yes, in practice, that sounds like it would make sense. Like, I remember having this debate back in sixth form media before the Xbox One and the PS4 came out, because there were, you know, as per usual, there were all the rumors that the Xbox One and the PS4 weren't going to come with disc drives. And they were saying, well, because it costs less to produce the games because they're not making discs and plastic cases and so on, the games themselves will be cheaper. And it's like, no, they won't. Because that's not going that's going to benefit the consumer, but not going to benefit the
they want the money.
Producers. Yeah. They're going to bump everything up higher, which they do with digital distribution. So, a demo discounting the main game sounds like a great idea.
In theory, I like the idea when you play a demo and you unlock something like a skin, or you unlock some sort of like early XP boost or whatever, things that can transfer over on the player side. But yeah, the gaming industry is too money hungry and would never everybody would just play the demos, and then all like then the final retail price would get lower and whatever. It's that's a really lovely idea, but the most of the industry's companies wouldn't agree.
I mean, although unlocking stuff within the game, the Iron Man VR demo came out yesterday, and if you play that, you get a new skin for Iron Man in the game, which I don't really understand because it's a VR game. You can't see
thinking that. Yeah, it's like some lava.
There's mirrors.
You see your arms and your hands, but you can't see much further than that unless you can just see it in cutscenes. But how would a cutscene work in VR? I need to try the demo.
like Kirsten said, it's a lot of mirrors. But Kirsten, what do you think of the idea of loyalty rewards demos?
Yeah, I think, like you said, having some sort of reward where it's sort of like, you know, yeah, we appreciate the fact that you've played the demo, so here, have a skin or a weapon or something. That's brilliant. But yeah, just getting money off of something that you probably most of the time have downloaded for free doesn't make any sense. I understand if you've maybe paid like £10-15 for like a beta and then you've completed that and then they've gone, oh, thanks, you've bought the beta, we'll give you some money off the full game. Then I understand that. But when you're downloading something for free, which is normally only like max, like maybe what, half hour, 45 minutes of gameplay, and then to be like, well, I've completed it, give me money off. It's like, but you got it for free. So I understand to sort of like, you know, just to have that appreciation for someone downloading and playing the demo and be like, thanks for that, mate. Here, have a skin. Like that would be good. But I think it's a bit cheeky to ask for money off.
Maybe in some sort of utopian world, we'd get discounts on games based on demos. So for the last question, this one came from Jem Duduku, who asked about what is the best short game. Now, you guys did that on the other podcast. Rich has already answered that stuff. Yep. So we'll just flip it. We'll talk about the best long games. How much or which games have you guys played that you've just dumped the most hours into so far anyway?
On record in a shorter time frame so far for me, that's surprisingly Planet Coaster. I've stuck nearly 400 hours into that game since it came out in 2016. Just been building theme parks for 400 hours of my life. I love it.
Theme park?
No. Ever since that game came out, I've only built one park to completion.
Right.
Because I put a lot of time into my parks, so much so that I go so heavy with my theming, my finished park runs at maybe 15-20 FPS because there's so many secret
options. That's what I wanted to see you do in scratching that game.
That's the thing that I put the most time into. Like those are the kind of games that I love putting time into. When a game just expects you to put time into it, it's kind of how I saw Horizon Zero Dawn, which I was so excited to play, and it was like, oh, by the way, open world, go do some meaningless stuff. I'm like, well, now I don't want to play you, and I've not been back to it. So if a game is long, I know it's good, but if a game is long, let me make the decision to put the time in. Don't expect me to put the time in.
I think
that sucks.
When stuff defaults to like, oh, it's 200 hours long and it gets good after like 30 hours, it's like, that's a hell of a time investment. Mine would be, we did a chatty face on this a while ago, but the most time I've ever spent in anything ever is The Witcher 3. My save file is like 620 hours, which is just ludicrous, to be honest. But that game was my 2015. And then since then, it's just been Rocket League and Call of Duty Modern Warfare. It's just a couple of games every day. Rocket League is on some ludicrous hour count. I haven't checked it for a while and I don't want to, but I check that I play that every single day for a few matches. Kirsten, what would yours be? Have you got a particular thing you live on?
Oh, it's got to be Oblivion. Oblivion is just my baby. I have played that from the moment it came out and I still play it now. I still go back to it. And like, you know, when you just sort of like someone mentions it or something reminds you of it, or you get like the memes where it's like the bloody guards and stuff. Like there were so many memes on the Oblivion guards. And as soon as I see something, I'm just like, oh, I need to go back and play it. And no matter, it doesn't matter when I play it or how long for, I just always enjoy myself and I always seem to find something new. I don't understand how after so many years I still come across things that I'm like, oh, I don't remember this being here before. Like, I've never come across this before. It's just a brilliant game. It's just a game that just keeps on giving. And to be honest, I don't think I've ever actually checked how many hours I've put into it, but I know it's a lot. And now I'm kind of scared to look at how many hours I've put into it. But yeah, I'm gonna have to find out that, I think, and share it on Twitter and let everyone know, because yeah, that's a good few years of gameplay, like continuous gameplay there. It's just brilliant. I was gonna say Skyrim, but then I just remembered, I was like, no, I'm still playing Oblivion, man.
I remember Oblivion being like the first big deal when people were just living on that thing. If you combined all the Elder Scrolls, that would be like a few thousand hours. Like for me, my Oblivion is Skyrim. That was the one that I really latched onto. But Elder Scrolls in general, back when Bethesda were like on it, though they absolutely nail it, even on the Fallout side too. Yeah, you guys can head over to Twitter, use the hashtag WCGP to let us know different questions and thoughts and whatever you'd like us to get to in the coming weeks. For now, this has been the What Culture Gaming Podcast. I've been your host, Scott Taylor, joined by Rich Hudson.
Thank you for listening.
And Kirsten Rhea.
Thank you very much.
I'll catch you guys next time. Bye.
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 Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.